I don't exercise as much as I should, but if there's a heated pool around, I usually can find the time to take a swim, which is not only a good workout, but the water has a positive psychological effect on me as well. Bathing played a major part in ancient Roman culture and society. It was one of the most common daily activities in Roman culture and was practiced across a wide variety of social classes. While the extremely wealthy could afford bathing facilities in their homes, most people bathed in the communal baths, which resembled modern-day spas where people could socialize and in some cases was considered a spiritual or religious activity, as heated communal baths were also available in some temples, sometimes built on a natural hot spring. Of course, the practice predates Rome, as the ancient Greeks were also fond of bathing, and the earliest baths in Europe were discovered on the island of Crete in the palace complex at Knossos in the form of luxurious alabaster bathtubs about 4,000 years old. Greek mythology specified that certain natural springs or tidal pools were blessed by the gods to cure disease. Around these sacred pools, Greeks established bathing facilities for those desiring to heal, with the Spartans developing ancient steam baths. The Iranians were also fond of bathhouses that they called hammams, as Islamic faith stresses ritual purity through washing one's body. The pre-Islamic Zoroastrian priests, however, considered the element of water holy and did not really allow them, but other Iranian populations did, and bathing chambers were cut into the hillside, into the rock. Of course, one of the major problems with bathhouses, particularly in Rome, was that the water was not changed very often, and this would lead to unsanitary conditions, which in turn encouraged bacteria and therefore possible illnesses to ensue. The Roman Empire considered the Germanic tribes, which eventually overthrew them, as less civilized, and while it was true that the northern Europeans did not bathe frequently during the Christian era, before that, they would frequently bathe naked together in lakes and rivers, but Christianity frowned on nudity, so this practice stopped. But in what are called pagan times, the nude river bathing was a co-ed activity, as documented by Julius Caesar himself. This practice was not, however, sexual in nature, as the Germanic or Aryan tribes believed that there was a spiritual and physical power and vitality that was gained by practicing celibacy, which in this case meant abstinence until marriage, but not seclusion, as being nude around each other encouraged a limited degree of arousal and therefore an accumulation of life force energy. In India, this energy is called prana and is harnessed in various ways, from certain breathing techniques to maintaining specific postures, as in yoga or qigong-like movements. But the most powerful and esoteric is from harnessing the energy created through arousal. While I can't go into much detail here on this platform, I'll give some examples to help illustrate my point, which, like the Aryan Germanic tribes, the ancient Aryans of India would also refrain from expelling their essence, except for when attempting to have children, as they would transmute rather than waste their vitality, or as I've said in the past, the highest caste would refrain from spilling the cup of Hermes. One example of an Indian practitioner of these occult practices was Mahatma Gandhi, who in the year 1946, Gandhi asked his 19-year-old great-niece Manu to sleep in his bed in order to test his sexual desire and vows of celibacy. Even though he was in his mid-70s, Gandhi had a heightened energetic appetite and even included Abha, his great-nephew's wife, in these experiments, where they would all sleep nude together. While most people have denounced these unusual sleeping arrangements as perverted, I'd like to try to give some insight into the motive. And keep in mind, this is not an endorsement. I'm merely offering some insight in the context of education, not as instruction. That said, his female physician, Sushila Nayar, was also reported to take baths with him, which after his death has been largely removed from the public record to protect his reputation. But Gandhi unapologetically recommended people try as part of his Brahmacharya experiments. He recommended that everyone should carry on their own experiments according to their own capacity, and Gandhi seemed to have a very high capacity for young, nude women, which he claimed gave him extraordinary spiritual benefits. Now, I obviously was not there, so I can't say for certain, but in my humble opinion, Gandhi did not consummate these relationships, as the purpose was not intercourse, but to achieve heightened states of arousal, which is what he meant by testing his celibacy. It is a common misconception that celibacy, in a religious context, means totally refraining from any romantic activity, as in ancient esoteric practices, it involved rather prolonged activities that just did not involve the typical climax associated with reproduction. Instead, the energy that is created is harnessed and transmuted rather than expelled and converted to more subtle forms, which in the nomenclature of Tantra are what is meant by spiritual enlightenment or higher states of consciousness, as it is the stimulated nervous system, which includes the brain and pineal gland, which is awakened and allows for access to one's higher self, or what is considered by some to be God. In his article, What is Brahmacharya?, published in 1924, Gandhi described Brahmacharya as the search for Brahma, which means truth, where he insisted that it was vital to have control over sexual urges. Gandhi was of the opinion that this purity of body and spirit, this conquest of lust, this control over sexuality, was to be the true path to enlightenment and the basis for sexual experiments with many women, including his grandnieces, Manu and Abba, and his personal physician, Sushila Nayar. In an entry of her personal diary, dated December 28, 1946, Manu wrote, quote, "Bapu is initiating me to a higher human plane through Brahmacharya experiments. Any loose talk about the experiment is most condemnable." None of the women ever suggested that Gandhi made improper advances or that the encounter was in any manner sexual. Gandhi himself said that, quote, "Physical union for the sake of carnal satisfaction is reversion to animality." Gandhi also never shied away from disclosing and discussing his controversial experiments. It was mostly covered up after his passing in an effort to protect his reputation. I suspect that most people will discount any spiritual benefits from these activities and will dismiss them as the behavior of a pervert, and while anyone is free to their own conclusions, I'll offer another example soon to help illustrate the occult goals that are involved here. Ancient Aryans in India also had bathing rituals, thought about more than just physically cleaning the body, which oftentimes included chanting, thought to nourish and purify the human spirit. Bathing has a strong role in yoga, and during the bath, extra attention is placed on the breath, and rigorous oil massage usually followed. In Ayurvedic bath, you're surrounded by earthly elements that are meant to relax and rejuvenate, which sometimes include turmeric, ginger powder, rose petals, honey, and almond oil. That said, the bathing rituals were also common in parts of Eurasia. the ancient Aryan homeland. And this includes the early emperors of China, who often had their own private bath for alchemical enjoyment with his queen, but also separate bathing facilities for his harem or entourage, usually built on top of natural hot springs. Of course, this brings us to ancient Anatolia and to the other example that I mentioned earlier. The Turkish bath, or similar ones found in Syria and the Levant, is a type of steam bath, or a place of public bathing that's considered an extension of the Roman and Islamic bathing practices, but in actuality may predate both of them, and seems to be a combination of the two, where you have the bathing, but you also have the hot steam, and very elaborate nude massaging and attractive women that provide specific services as well as the right ambiance for arousal. Here is an exterior shot of a bathhouse in Aleppo, which features blue and white stripes with a golden dome on top. It's a type of architecture that was prominent in places like Syria and Palestine, or modern-day Israel, and flourished after Ali was murdered in 661 AD. He was the son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad, but I want to stress that today's topic predates Islam and much of the Muslim faith, especially in the context of the highest levels of Freemasonry, which stems back to the Phoenicians, as Hiram Abiff, a central figure in Masonic rituals, and King Hiram, who helped King Solomon build his temple, was a king of Tyre, the Phoenician capital, in the modern nation of Lebanon. 33rd degree Freemason Albert Pike stated that the name Hiram could be better translated as Kurum, meaning white noble. For example, the Egyptian deity called by the Greeks Horus was Herkakorum. Therefore, improperly called Hiram is Korum, the same as Hera or Hermes and Heracles, the personification of light and the sun, the mediator, redeemer, and savior. I understand that this will now seem blasphemous to many, but keep in mind this is an educational video, not an endorsement. Many of the world's elite, especially those affiliated with secret societies and intelligence organizations, partake in occult activities that derive from the ancient mystery religions. While these activities are generalized as Luciferian, also keep in mind that Lucifer literally translates to light bearer, and in early and pre-Christian times did not represent a dark evil entity, but rather was perceived in a positive light, much like Prometheus, who disobeyed the gods and gave fire to man, rather than an entity that was worshipped in the modern sense of the word. The occult mysteries represented a sort of ancient technology that allegedly gave initiates access to what are today considered as psychic or extraordinary abilities and perceptions. In the case of this man, whose name I'll try to avoid mentioning, but is famous for allegedly committing suicide in prison and associated with many powerful and prominent world leaders who he would entertain on his private island, we find that he erected a structure which has an uncanny resemblance to the Syrian bathhouse I showed you earlier, which I said had affinities to the ancient Phoenicians. While this structure seems to be an aesthetic imitation and not actually a bathhouse, it has been proposed that it's an entrance to an underground facility where alleged ritualistic activities took place, which I'd now like to discuss. According to allegations made by young female victims of the billionaire owner of the notorious island, Jeffrey would take business calls in the middle of explicit massages from young, often nude women or girls. According to this article in the Business Insider, the women alleged that he would sometimes halt a massage when he was, quote, on the verge of climaxing to make calls to what were perceived to be important people. These business calls were taken while receiving intimate massages from women, while very aroused, as one of the alleged victims claimed that, quote, he would take phone calls with important people during the massages, and that he would sometimes stop a massage when he was on the verge of ejaculating to make a call. He would take or initiate up to 4 business calls during any particular sensual massage, the lawsuit said, adding that he would always answer the phone if someone called during a sensual massage. So while many people will likely discount this testimony as the behavior of an egotistical and insane man, I would like to suggest that it stems from an ancient esoteric tradition which, like in the case of Gandhi, has to do with activating the central nervous system through prolonged, intense arousal, then through methods of internal alchemy, harnessing, transmuting, and rechanneling the prana, chi, orgone, or vril, words describing a subtle life force energy, into what Gandhi and yogic practitioners and monks call divine communion with God, and members of secret societies and organizations such as Jeffrey utilize to gain access to heightened intuitive powers, which we all allegedly have access to, and some people exploit for extreme wealth and financial gain. Whether this psychic ability is real or not, I will leave to the viewer to discern. But these ancient techniques are revered by the world's elite, many of whom, from pharaohs to emperors, went through great lengths to guard and keep secret. To touch on this same point from a slightly different perspective, let's listen to how Taoist master Montauk Chia replies to a question concerning internal alchemy.
Could you explain the difference for men between orgasm and ejaculation?
Yes, that's very important because usually we don't explain that. We don't know. So when we get very close, very good, very highly arousal, orgasm, very highly orgasm, and you want more. But there are no more. Okay? So we call a very genital orgasm. Very short. Very short and very limited. So the orgasm right here. And it's go to ejaculation. So we experience orgasm, and you want more orgasm, then no more. Okay? So it jump right into the orgasm. So now when you learn very simple, when you feel very highly arousal, when you feel very highly orgasm, you stop for a moment, feel it. Okay? So sometimes we said you go up to be 90, 95, 94, 96, 97%, you think, I get close. So if you never train it, you go so close and ejaculation finish. Okay? So men, when ejaculation, we said, you dump out all your sperm out, and the body need to build up, and the sperm is the essence. So the Chinese, the right, the sperm means jing, the life essence. And how important is the life essence? Because it build a whole human. And how important? It's very smart human, come out from this sperm and egg. So it's very important. So there's a lot of energy into it. Now, in the moment of ejaculation, if you rest and you can feel that orgasm started to expand, okay? So, but if you train the prostate gland and you train the buttock contracting, you started to have the idea to control it. And the mind power is the most important part. So the Tao said once, if you one time stop ejaculations, the mind power double increasing. That's how much power you get. If it's 2 times, so in the list that we're talking about, 1 time, what benefit to you? 2 times, 3 times, when you, so the 10 times, you're talking about, they said when you can hold and not ejaculation, make love and no ejaculation, you can talk to God. That's what the priest they discovered that. So when they have sex with the wife, before that the priest can marry, and they discover when they have sex, God don't want to talk to them. Next day you go to the temple, God don't want to talk to you. So they become a rule. When the priest have sex, they have to stay away from the temple 1 week because they cannot go into the temple anymore. So later on they say, okay, if I want to talk to God every day, I don't marry better. So they become no marry because when they don't lose sexual energy, they can talk to God all the time. So that's why ejaculation and orgasm, you have to split them out. And it's not difficult. If only that when you get closer, in the beginning, it's a little bit difficult because in the olden time, when you get closer, you faster, so fast, ejaculation finish. And you get tired, exhausted, turn over, thank you, honey, and you go to sleep. You know, but you lose a lot of energy that way. Now, extended orgasm, because as we talk about orgasm and love, is the very important part to make the cell split. That's all. So if the normal very fast orgasm and very fast have sex and ejaculation, you don't spend enough time to build up your orgasm. So we call a genital orgasm. Very short. And you say, oh my God, I want more. It's no more. And every time you go on ejaculation, you have lesser orgasm. Because you don't have no more. You drain them all out and you have no more. But when the first time you hold, there's a lot of process you need to know. Because when you hold up the ejaculation, you have too much energy back. And you have to crazy. We have too much energy. So when I make love, I have so much energy. And I cannot sleep. The only one way is get up and write book. So I write 40 books now. So it gives you a lot of creating power and a lot of energy to do things. That's how the... So not difficult. When you get closer to ejaculation, you think, hey, I'm going to come. I'm going to ejaculation. You rest, lightly contract the prostate gland and buttock, and you rest. That's it. Now, when you rest, you start to feel that orgasm expanding, but not ejaculation, you see? And when you get control, you go on again. So your orgasm expanding more, but you also get dangerous to close to ejaculation. So the Tao text they call, don't go beyond of the point of no return. That's very important. When you go to the point of no return, you ejaculation, that's it, you start over again next time. So when you practice for a while, you feel the length, the gap between the orgasm and ejaculation is bigger. And the orgasm get higher beyond you have orgasm before. So from here, ejaculation, but now when you lengthen this one out, this orgasm come up. So the Tao separate them to kidney orgasm, liver orgasm, heart orgasm, lung orgasm, brain orgasm. It's really feel the orgasm come up to the brain and it opening you up. So you have expanding orgasm rather than limited orgasm. So the orgasm before is what? A few seconds. And you feel good and finish. But in this way, your orgasm bigger, wider, and it multiply. So we call a total body orgasm. And later on, you go to what we call by cosmic orgasm. You expand your orgasm to the universe. And that's what the whole universe is, the energy, sexual energy come together, creating the whole universe. So try it out. So amazing, simple, but it's so amazing practice. And you don't believe it, if you're looking for more energy, this is the energy that you're going to get. You don't get any extra energy from anywhere, believe me. The sexual energy is your extra energy that you have.
The type of energy Master Chia is referring to is not the kind you get from drinking coffee or sugar. It's Qi, or Ki, a creative force that makes you more alive and present in the moment. The way that a boxer might refrain from women before a fight is not expected to make him physically stronger or necessarily faster, but may help in his timing, or how some athletes sometimes say that they're in the zone, which is very different from being able to bench press more weight, but rather implies an increased intuitive ability and a deeper connection to one's surroundings. It's this extra life force energy, or Vril, that the occult secret societies in Germany pursued during the early 20th century within metaphysical organizations such as the Vril Society, headed by the mystic Maria Orsich, who was a renowned channeler. While I use some notorious examples in this video, such as Jeffrey on his island, I could have just as easily have made the point with more positive historic figures, such as Nikola Tesla, considered by many to be a genius, who also practiced celibacy and claimed to be able to tap into the universal mind. The list extends to Pythagoras, Plato, Copernicus, Isaac Newton, Voltaire, Friedrich Nietzsche, Leonardo da Vinci, and Beethoven. So it isn't a matter of a technique used by good people or evil people, but more like an ancient practice that provides an advantage in life. Oh, another example would be a guy known as Alexander the Great, who learned from none other than his alchemical teacher, Aristotle. Which brings us to an interesting quote from the Bible, where Jesus says, quote, "For there are some eunuchs which were born so from their mother's womb, and there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men, and there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it." My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon, as well as through various other major book outlets. They make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you could do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those that are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your comments. So please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.